The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. I'm Kevin Kelly. Later on in the show, I'll be talking with Fabio Luisi, who is a chief conductor of the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, who are going to be coming to the Krannert Center in Urbana, along with the Eroica Trio, tomorrow night at 7:30. He's also a principal conductor of the Metropolitan Opera, and talked with him actually last week, I think it was, while he was in between rehearsals at the Met, and I'll be airing that second part of today's show. But first, it'll be the actor and singer, guitarist, songwriter Ronnie Cox, who you may or may not know the name, but you certainly will have seen him in films of all kinds. You can check him out on the Internet Movie Database for the complete list, but the very first was the movie Deliverance. And he's coming to the studios here at WYNL to give a program tonight for some donors and friends. And I just took the occasion, took the opportunity to have a chat with him. Actually, when he's been driving down here, we recorded it earlier today, he's still on his way. But that's the wonder of radio. You can do these things. It's Ronnie Cox coming up in just a few minutes here on Live and Local.
Standing in the phone booth, dialing up your
That was a song called Can I Come Back Home, and it was performed by Ronnie Cox. Ronnie Cox as in the actor and guitarist and singer and songwriter. And this is from his CD called Ronnie Cox, Songs with Repercussions, and he's got a number of colleagues on this one. We've actually caught him on the road as he is heading down to Champaign-Urbana and the WYLL studios, where he's going to be given a kind of a private concert tonight for a number of donors and friends, and thought it would be a great opportunity to have a chat and to hear some of his music. So thanks very much for pulling off onto the side of the road and talking with us here for a bit.
Oh, thanks. I'm delighted to do it. This is such a treat for me to get to come and play the songs. I've got a wonderful singer and mandolin player with me, Karen Mall, and so the two of us just really have a great time together.
Well, I'm sure that I'm not alone in having been a little surprised to learn that the Ronnie Cox we knew from the films also happens to be quite a fine singer, guitarist, and songwriter. How long have you been at this?
Well, see, that's the thing. It is surprising to a lot of people, although people that have known me, I was actually calling square dances when I was 10 years old, and I was cutting records when I was in high school, And I got my first film, Deliverance, because I could play. My second big film was a film called Bound for Glory, the Woody Guthrie film. I picked and sang in that. And my first television series was a show called Apple's Way. And so early in my career, everybody knew that I was this actor from New Mexico that also played music. But it's typical, I suppose, of Hollywood, that I'm really lucky. I've had a wonderful career, mainly playing men of authority, guys with suits and ties, either presidents or the dictator of Mars or the head of the Beverly Hills Cops or military guys. And so I've done that so much that when people see me with a guitar in my hand, then they say, whoa, something's wrong here.
Well, I think probably, too, when somebody sees an actor with a guitar, they assume, oh, somebody else is really playing. That's a fake
yeah,
job.
Well, that is the double-edged sword. I mean, I sort of had to live that down because, let's face it, if we be honest, there are a whole bunch of actors that think just because they're actors that they can put a guitar around their neck and all of a sudden that makes them a great guitarist or a great singer. And I'm not that everybody likes my music, they don't, but But it's sort of the easiest thing in the world to turn that around, because all people have to do is come and hear us play. Now, they may not necessarily love my music, but at least they know that we're really serious musicians.
Well, I'm looking at a quote here that's on your website under the buy section, where the people can look at your CDs and hopefully make a purchase. And it says here, "I know what you're thinking, another Hollywood actor who thinks he can sing." Well, you'll be pleasantly surprised. And I certainly was. I mean, I've enjoyed all these songs on this CD. And, you know, I just kind of went through and listened and made notes that, well, I think I'd like to play this one, like to play this one. And purely by coincidence, because I didn't go back and look to see who wrote what, three of the favorites that I pulled happened to be the ones you wrote.
Well, good. I also am a singer-songwriter who loves to do other people's music. I mean, I don't necessarily do covers per se, but I love finding somebody else's song that I can somehow make my own, and that means a lot to me.
Well, here's one I wanted to play that, with the introduction, I didn't know quite what was coming, and as soon as you started into the lyric, I thought, I mean, this has always been one of my favorite songs, and you do it so beautifully, which is "The Water Is Wide."
Yeah, that was my late wife Mary's favorite song, and so I wanted to do that song for her.
Well, I noticed at the beginning of the CD's notes, it says that this song is more than anything else about the absence of Mary. Had she just passed a little bit before you made this recording?
A year or two before. See, Mary and I were either married, engaged, going together, or known each other since she was 11 and I was 14. I've never had another date or another girlfriend in my life, and so being without Mary has been a really tough thing to deal with.
Yeah, I imagine so. Well, let's kind of pay tribute to her, and this is just a beautiful rendition of the song "The Water Is Wide," and it's Ronnie Cox singing and on guitar. This is "The Water Is Wide" from his CD called "Songs with Three Percussions," here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
The water is wide, and
song's called "The Water Is Wide" and sung here by Ronnie Cox, excuse me, on his CD called "Songs with Three Percussions." We're talking to him really because we'll be pleased to have him at the WYLL TV studios tonight. He's performing for a private audience of donors who essentially bought the opportunity in advance, and looking forward to having him here. We're actually catching him on the road on the way down to our Urbana studios. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. I wanted to ask you briefly about Deliverance. You know, I have to be one of the few people in America that's never seen the movie.
Well, okay. First of all, it was my first film. It was essentially my first time in front of a camera, and most people don't realize it was Ned Beatty's first film, too. And it's amazing that you would pick that, because as we're speaking, it's 40 years ago right now that we were making Deliverance. And I've just written a book on Deliverance, on the making of Deliverance. That's going to come out next year for the 40th anniversary of the film being released. And of all the films I've ever done, more people want to talk about Deliverance than any other film. And it's one that, my whole career is predicated on my having gotten that wonderful role. So it's been a big break to me, and I'm really excited to be having the book coming out. We're going to have there'll be advanced copies coming out probably after the first of the year sometime.
I am actually a little curious about it. I saw I did look at the the famous dueling banjos. Well, it's really dueling plectral instruments with you're playing guitar and the other fellow playing the banjo. When you do a musical scene like that, you know, where you're clearly playing at least part of the time, how does that work? With I know they used a body double for the other fellow on the banjo.
Yeah, well, both are, the song has to be pre-recorded, and then what we do is, as you know, but for your listeners, we have to match the playback. So in other words, it's pre-recorded, then they slate the cameras, and then we play along with with the recording, but they're not recording us. They're taking the recording that's been pre-recorded, and we're just faking like we're playing.
But as somebody who does play, you were obviously playing some of that.
I was. I mean, well, here's the thing. I matched it note for note, so I played every note on there. Absolutely note for note for note for note. That's me. But when push comes to shove, that's not me on the soundtrack. That's Steve Mandel, who played the guitar part. And I probably cost myself well over $1 million by not being the one. Because I played it. I'm not the one that's on the recording.
You know, I read somewhere, and tell me if this is, well, you can tell me if this is true, that when you're making a film or a television show, that a lot of the dialogue that you see on screen is actually overdubbed. Is that true?
Not a lot. What would happen if you're doing a scene and a plane would fly over? Then obviously it's like overdubbing on a record or anything like that, you know. But they try to do as little of that, what we call looping, as possible. Because no matter how, and I don't care how good you are, and I'm really good at looping, the reason you had a performance that they printed and that they liked that performance is because you said the words well, and to go back in and put words over those, no matter how good you are, you can always see that it's not quite the same.
Well, that's what I would have thought.
Yeah, so they try to do what we call looping as little as possible.
That was just one of those things I read somewhere, and I thought I had no idea that that might happen. I thought, hey, I've got an actor on the phone here. I might as well ask him that question. In putting together this current CD called Ronnie Cox Sings with Three Percussions, did you have an overriding theme in choosing some of the songs?
Just songs that did have repercussions, songs that meant something to me in some way, and sometimes silly, sometimes, and it really is largely about the absence of Mary, and a lot of them were songs that she liked. Or that I like that sort of reminded me of her, and then the other thing is I love good songs. So if I find a song that I want to do, I don't care if I wrote it or if somebody else wrote it. Then I like to, because I like a lot of variation on my album, and for me, my goal as an artist is my absolute goal is if I can make you giggle on one song and actually make you weep on the next, then that's what I like to do.
So people better have their handkerchiefs ready for some of your shows.
I don't know about that, but I like songs that touch us. Either touch our funny bones or touch us in other ways. I think that's the great thing about folk music and about acoustic music in general is it's music that we share and that touches us. I've had a whole lot of people come to me and say things like, I had forgotten that music like this existed. I had forgotten that I could be touched like this with music. And that means the world to me.
Well, we've had our weepy song, so to speak, in the Water Is Wide. Let's have a Funny Bone song here, just even from the title, Milkbone Underwear. Do you want to?
Yes.
Is there any kind of introduction you'd like to give, or just listen to it?
It's actually based on a line from Cheers. One night, a songwriter, Jimmy Allen Stewart, and I were sitting around watching Cheers, and Norm comes in, and he said, "It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milkbone shorts." And Jimmy and I looked at each other and said, "Holy Toledo, that's a song title." So we wrote it. It's just a silly little song, but we had a lot of fun doing it.
It's Milkbone Underwear with Ronnie Cox from his CD Songs with Three Percussions. He's actually going to be singing at the WYNL studios tonight for some of our donors and friends, and pleased to talk with him on the occasion. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
When I walked into work this morning, the boss was in my face. Underwear.
Song's called Milkbone Underwear by Ronnie Cox. And who's the other fellow with you here?
Jimmy Allen Stewart co-wrote the song with me.
Not to be confused with the other Jimmy Stewart.
No, this is Jimmy Allen Stewart, who a wonderful songwriter from Nashville.
When you write your own songs, do they tend to come from the sort of whimsical experience that you had in watching Cheers, or do they typically have kind of what you might call atypical inspirations?
Yeah, more. I almost never write the ones like Milkbone Underwear from that kind of experience. I'm a sort of a strange nut for songwriting. I get melodies ages before I get, a lot of people find an idea and then write a poem and then put that to music, and I don't write that at all. I find a melody that I like, and sometimes I don't even know what the song is about, and then eventually, by singing this melody over and over and over again, then pretty soon I sort of know what the song is about, and then I have to craft lyrics to fit the melody.
Do you often do you do most of your shows solo or with other people?
I almost never do a show solo. The joy for me is playing with other musicians. Normally I play with Karen and with Radoslav Lorkovic, who's a piano slash accordionist. And it's nearly always I play with the three of us. But Karen and I do really well together. The fun for me, the joy for me in music is playing with other players. Music to me is like a dialogue, and I can do solo shows, but they just are not, they're not the joy for me.
Is it sort of like talking to yourself?
Exactly. Exactly.
Not quite as fun as actually talking with another person.
Yeah.
Well, it's been my pleasure to talk to you this morning, and it's Ronnie Cox, the actor and singer and songwriter, and let's go out with another of your songs. I guess I'll give you the choice here, because I like these both, and I can't decide. Grady or Santa Ana Winds, which do you want
to hear?
Well,
it depends on whether you want to be kind of sad or not. maybe Grady.
Let's go with Grady. Grady, somebody we ought to know about?
Nah, Grady was a guy that was in my hometown.
And it's Ronnie Cox here from his CD Songs with Repercussions on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us.
Grady walked 2 miles in the town, and he was
by God.
Ronnie Cox, song's called Grady. It's his own song, along with somebody whose last name is Shamblin. Unfortunately, I don't know what the initial A stands for. Well, yes, I do. It says here Alan Shamblin Music. So it must be Ronnie Cox and Alan Shamblin from Ronnie's CD called Songs with Repercussions. He's actually on his way to the WYNL-TV studios. He's going to be playing a concert for some of our donors and friends tonight. And it was pleasure to talk to him earlier on the show today. It's live and local here on FM 90.9. I hope you enjoyed hearing his music as much as I did. The Wampanoag Nation saved the Pilgrims from starvation and lived to regret it. We Still Live Here is our next community cinema. It tells the story of linguist Jesse Littledoe reviving the Wampanoag language more than a century after the last native speaker died. The free public screening is at the main Champaign Public Library Tuesday, November 8th. That's tomorrow from 6 to 8:30 p.m. The film is closed captioned and the discussion translated by a sign language interpreter. Our program today is made possible with support from the Cranford Art Museum, presenting a public opening reception for the School of Art and Design faculty exhibition on Thursday, November 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. The exhibition highlights new work by the faculty, ranging from paintings and sculpture to graphic design and new media. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll be talking with the chief conductor of the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, who are going to be at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30, along with the Eroica Trio. His name is Fabio Luisi. He also happens to be principal conductor of the Metropolitan Opera. And here's a performance by the Vienna Symphony, conducted by Luisi, of an overture by Gioachino Rossini. It's called The Silken Ladder. Apologies for the poor sound quality of that recording, but at least you have a representation of sorts of the Vienna Symphony, led by my next guest, Fabio Luisi. He's chief conductor of that orchestra and also principal conductor of the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. And he's coming with the Vienna Symphony to the Krannert Center, along with the Eroica Trio, tomorrow night at 7:30. And I had a chance to talk with him about a week ago, may even have been 2 weeks ago now, when he was in the midst of rehearsals at the Metropolitan Opera. What does it mean to be principal conductor of the Metropolitan Opera? Because I think that's a fairly new title.
Well, actually, yes, it is a new title. The last time this title has been used was for James Levine in 1974, a couple of years before he became new music director of the Metropolitan Opera. So you can imagine that this is a big honor for me to having been appointed with this title.
Does that, I mean, I hate to jump the gun here, but does that suggest any sort of potential succession, or is that premature to ask?
I think this is really premature to ask for the moment. I'm very happy with this job. And it is a job which allows me to have a very close relationship with the orchestra of the Metropolitan Opera House, which, as we all know, one of the finest, best orchestras in the United States and probably worldwide.
What does it actually mean to be a principal conductor?
Well, this is about a close relationship. I'm actually the conductor who conducts the most performances in this house. And I'm involved also in artistic decisions together with the artistic committee, together with the artistic team. And of course, my job, so to say, is to work constantly with orchestra, with ensemble, with the chorus, in order to keep the skills, the quality these ensembles have, and to improve them.
And then you're also chief conductor of the Vienna Symphony. Is that a similar relationship with that orchestra?
It is a very good relationship I have since 6 years now. 7th year is my 7th year, actually, as the music director of Vienna Symphony. It is quite different because Vienna Symphony is mainly a symphonic orchestra. Vienna Symphony doesn't play very often opera. They do, actually, but as I said, not very often.
Is the role of chief conductor with the Vienna Symphony and music director, is that the same title, or is that...
It is quite the same title, yes.
And so does that, again, mean that you conduct most of the concerts? Because I know they have a number of other conductors
involved. I conduct most of the concerts, and I have also responsibilities concerning some programming, not all, because we have to talk with the presenters and with the promoters of the concerts. And so I also take artistic decisions.
How does one juggle two such massive jobs, one of which is primarily the opera world, one of which is primarily the symphonic world?
Well, they are complementary, actually, and it is very challenging because New York is in another continent than Vienna, so you need a very good organization and also very tolerant partners in your family.
Yeah, I imagine that they need to be very tolerant. But how do you manage it yourself? Do you have any sort of compartmentalization of symphonic music versus operatic music?
No, I'm a very, very hard worker, and I like every kind of music, of course, opera and symphonic music alike. And so I try to organize my work so I don't have such problems.
You began as a pianist, as I understand.
Yes, I did.
At what point did you think you might like to conduct, and then at what point did you actually start conducting?
Well, I started relatively late because my first idea was to become a concert pianist, and little by little I was attracted by orchestras because with orchestras we can face some composers that haven't composed for piano, like, for example, Bruckner or Mahler or other. And this was a challenge for me because I wanted to know such composers. And the only way to do so was to study conducting.
And so when you said you came to conducting relatively late, what does that mean?
With 20, I started my studies in conducting when I was 20 years old.
Oh, you beat me by 10 years then. I got going at about 30, but I was never a pianist, and I always thought that was for myself a liability. How critical is it, or maybe how valuable has it been for you to be a pianist as opposed to, say, a horn player like I was?
Well, it was crucial because I started my career as a pianist in an opera house in Austria, in a small theater. And this was so important to me because it was the way to know very deeply the operatic repertoire, because you work every day on the piano, playing piano in all stage rehearsal for an opera production, and knowing exactly how it works in a theater, which responsibilities, which issues, which skills are needed for this job. And so it was a couple of years I worked there, and they were the best school I could possibly have.
And that's where you're coaching the singers and so on. And there's a title for in Europe for different titles as you go up the operatic ladder, so to speak, beginning with vocal coaching, aren't there?
Yes, I began with vocal coaching, which is in Germany called Chorrepetitor, and then with the head of coaching, which is Studienleiter, and then finally conducting a little bit when the chief conductor was sick, and so it began.
I mean, I know you haven't experienced this for yourself, but from what you understand of the United States process, is it very similar where it's pianists have the same process of getting of working their way through the opera world in the United States?
Not really. It is really limited to the German-speaking countries, and nowadays not so much like as was before.
Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing or neither?
It was a very good thing because I know every aspect of opera producing. And many younger colleagues don't.
What do you think is the result of that?
The result of them is that there is not so much understanding about, for example, the needs of the singers in an opera performance or in an opera production, and not so much understanding about the workflow of an opera production. And I think they are very important aspects of making opera.
At what point did you start doing purely orchestral music? Was that mixed in from the beginning or primarily opera at
yes,
first?
Yes, quite from the beginning, because I had the chance to become a music director of a symphonic orchestra in Vienna. It was the Tonkünstler Orchestra, and there I could learn the symphonic repertoire.
Do you, I've noticed in looking at your recording output that there's some operas that that I personally haven't heard of much. And I wondered if you've made a point of getting interested in and involved in perhaps slightly lesser known operas. I'm thinking, for example, of Verdi's Jerusalem, but there are others as well.
Well, they are in interesting operas. They are maybe not the among the big ones of Verdi, but they are quite interesting. And of course, you know, It is a job. Conducting is a job, and you get the possibility to do your job, and well, you do it. And when I got the offer to record Jerusalem, I was thrilled, excited, and very interested.
Well, you know, it's nice to hear somebody admit that yes, these things that that probably most other people think, oh, you're doing this because it's something you just are compelled to do. It is also a job.
Well, let's say, of course, I don't do something which I don't like, but I'm also very happy if I get a chance to do my job.
Sure. Well, I mean, you could have said, no, I don't want to do that.
Of course.
That actually raises an interesting question, though. So that piece was suggested to you. It wasn't an opportunity you sought out to conduct that particular opera, for example?
No, they asked me to do that.
Had you ever done that opera before, or did you have to learn it
from
scratch?
No, at that time I hadn't, but I did it later also in theater. I conducted Jerusalem in Vienna at the Vienna State Opera later. It was a very good revival.
And there's been other operas as well that again are lesser known. Is that partly because opera companies? Recording labels are wanting to not have, you know, yet another recording of Don Giovanni, for example.
So yes, of course, there is a big interest about not so well known operas, which is understandable. If you have 30 different recordings of Don Giovanni, for a recording label is much more interesting to record the opera which has maybe one or none at all.
Have you made any kind of effort to do something similar with your own performances in with the Met and with other companies you work with?
Yes, I pushed a lot about performances or a recording of an Austrian composer I like very much, which is Franz Schmidt. And when I was chief conductor of the Broadcast Orchestra in Leipzig in Germany, I did a recording of all his symphonies and his major oratorium, the Book with Seven Seals. And this is a very, very interesting and good project.
Conductor Fabio Luisi, who is a principal conductor at the Metropolitan Opera, and in fact that's where we caught him in the middle of rehearsals a couple of weeks ago, had a chance to chat in advance of his performance with the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, of which he is chief conductor. They're going to be at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30, a program which includes the Second Symphony of Johannes Brahms and also the Triple Concerto of Beethoven, for which the orchestra and Maestro Luisi will be joined by the Eroica Trio, who we hear now in some music by Dietrich Buxtehude. It's from their Baroque CD. And this is the final of three movements of a sonata in D major. Music by Buxtehude from his D major sonata, Opus 2, performed here by the Eroica Trio, who will join the Vienna Symphony for Beethoven's Triple Concerto tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Here's just a few other events you can go see and hear live in our listening area. There's a jazz performance by Easton Stewart Duo at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 5 o'clock. At Illinois State University in Normal at the Center for the Performing Arts there. It's their ISU Madrigal Festival. That's actually going on until 3 o'clock today, so you can still hop on over there. There's an ISU Faculty Brass Concert at the Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And the University of Iowa Percussion Ensemble makes a guest appearance at the University of Illinois tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Memorial Hall on the Urbana campus. Our broadcast is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karistan Broadloom and Rug dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and classical music for Central Illinois.